everyone. Welcome to Rewatchable episode 90 of our coverage of Avatar The Last Airbender. We are now up to episodes 8 and 9 of book 3, so we're looking at Puppet Master and Nightmares and Daydreams. So today I'm Natalie, I'm hosting, and I'm joined by superfan Mitch. Hi, Mitch.
Well, hello. It's a big, big episode, and I know we've been waiting a long time for these newbies to get to it, haven't we?
Oh, okay. Well, both of them. I'm actually really glad that you're on this one for Nightmares and Daydreams, because I need some explanation about, like,
yeah, this must have been what you and Mikal were talking about, that there are a lot of references to video games, I think, that you wanted
to
explain.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
I'll try my best, because it's pretty thick. Like, there's, like,
okay.
50 embedded within a 20-minute episode. It's intense.
Well, we'll go with the main one.
Right,
then
right.
Our newbies this week are Ariana and Brittany. Hello, girls.
Hey, what's up?
Hi.
Oh, good. I was very excited for you guys to finally see Puppet Master because reasons. Yeah, so here we are, and we'll get straight into it. So if you want to read, and they're like so excited about that.
Oh, I can't wait.
We'll get straight into it with our contact info. If you want to reach us after the episode, is rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Our Twitter is re_watchable, or you can comment on this post on hyperbull.com with any, you know, comments, feedback for the episode, or thoughts about our entire rewatchable project if you really want. But going into chapter 8, The Puppet Master, in this chapter, the gang tells creepy ass stories at a campfire, hears zombies moaning underground, and decides to follow a random ratchet looking old lady in the middle of the night to her creepy ass inn. Hama is originally from the Southern Water Tribe, which, yay, makes for fun bonding times, until wham, she turns psychotic and bends Katara's blood. But Katara ain't no rookie, and she learns quick. The same skill that took Hama years to perfect on rats in prison was a cinch for Master Waterbending Princess of the World Katara to master. Hashtag all hail the queen. But Hama has the last laugh, because even as she's being taken away in shackles, the crazy old batter revels in the fact that her evil bloodbending has been passed down to another generation. So, yeah, the main point of this episode is definitely the fact that bloodbending exists, which is something we've kind of been leading up to in terms of discovering little tiny parts of waterbending, you know, bending inside plants, which we've sort of seen before, bending, you know, Katara's sweat, and just having the idea of being more creative about what you can bend with your element. But yeah, I want to go straight to Ariana first, because this is something that I know that you've kind of crack theorized about before. And were you ever expecting to see this in the show?
I mean, last week, I felt like something was going to happen, because I was like, yeah, the sweat. And then Mikal was like, next time. So I was excited. I mean, I definitely...
Oh, come on. Like, you say that I spoiled things. That was, like, the entire... she gave it away
I don't know. I'm just so excited that they went there, because it only makes sense. And I get that the waterbenders are much more peaceful, and this seems like a much more firebendery kind of thing to do. But somebody had to think of it. I mean, come on. It's just so dumb. Like, if the swamp people can figure out the, like, leaves thing, somebody should be able to figure this out.
Yeah. I think that, you know, we see it, like, just not that many benders, or at least this in their society at this time, not that many benders think outside their box. Like, how come no one invented metal bending until Toph was able to do it? You know,
so they just don't think.
Yeah, they just don't think outside their box that much. And, you know, hopefully as their society progresses, we'll have more bending, you know, all these different things. You know, maybe in 100 years or like 500 years, they'll be like, you know, crazy bending. But at the moment, yeah, we have only a little bit of variation. You say it's sort of more like fire bending. Like, do you mean that, like, in terms of, like, the violence of it?
Well, like, I get that it's evil, although I don't think that it has to always be. So that seems like more Fire Nation tendencies. But I just didn't understand why Katara was so, like sobbing at the end. I guess because the lady won, but I do think that it's a valuable arsenal to have for someone who is like self-disciplined enough. Like, I don't think Katara is going to like kill people with it, but like in that instance it was really valuable. Like if there's a psycho firebender trying to kill your friends, like maybe tie their hands behind their back. That would probably be a good thing.
With their blood.
No, fair enough. Brittany, how did you react to seeing the bloodbending? And do you think that it's like just another sort of trick that you should have in your arsenal? Or do you think there's more of a mental dirtiness to it, I guess?
Well, I think in terms of the old woman, there's definitely a mental dirtiness to it. But that's with everything. Like, you could take waterbending and, like, probably drown someone if you wanted to.
Yeah.
So there's that side with the all of your airbending or whatever, like you could find a way to use it. But I think that the way that she developed it was purely out of this like vindictive nature. And that's how she discovered that you could actually do it. I'm still waiting for them to suck the water out of people and turn them into like corn husks. Like we were talking about.
Like they did with the grass.
They did with the plants. That's what I thought at first. I was like, they're totally going to like dehydrate these people and suck all the water out of them. Cause like your body's like, what, 80% water or something like that? 90? Mm-hmm.
I believe it's like 63. I looked it up recently, and I was like, this should work.
I was getting confused with the brain.
That's still a lot.
Yeah.
I think the brain's 90% or something like that, and the body, is like 63 or somewhat.
Yeah. Just like drying up someone's eyeballs to blind them and getting really like niche with it and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's getting really violent, but like in this episode, it wasn't used, like nobody killed anybody with it. So, I mean, it is very mentally, like, it's wrong to control somebody, kind of like how, like, in Harry Potter, they're like, it's wrong to read people's minds. But is it really more wrong to, like, stop somebody from, would it be more wrong to stop Azula by, like, controlling her to stop than by, like, you said, drowning her or killing her, like, with spears and knives, like everybody else is trying to do? Which one is more wrong, to stop them or kill them?
It's a good point, but like referencing Harry Potter, and I don't know how I feel about this, but like in the Harry Potter universe, this is sort of somewhat similar to like the Imperius curse, if you know what I mean. Like, you know, and that's one of the three, you know, unforgivables, that, you know, with the pain and the murder, apparently, like, I don't know, like controlling other people, like physically or, you know, mentally controlling other people is seen as pretty bad. But I think that the points you're making are valid. Maybe we should give controlling people a fair go. Like maybe it is a nicer option than, you know, just, you know, killing someone or something. But it's
like,
definitely.
Would you rather like twist their arm behind their back using like your mind control powers or like, you know, throw a spear at them and then they're done anyway? Like, you could be a little more humane and just control them, like, sort of, like, in self-defense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love this. I love that you guys are just like, yeah, this is fine. I don't disagree. It's just,
we live in a world where people, like, blow fire out of their mouths. I mean, it's, like, different circumstances.
Yeah. I guess that there's just, as far as Katara's reaction goes, like, I guess that, like, you know, at the moment, their idea of kind of like, I guess, defense and like, you know, fighting is, you know, people doing their own actions and then you responding to their own actions. Like, yeah, I feel like that she was really upset because she took over, you know, that she gave in to she saw what Hama was doing as coming from a really bad place and she sort of gave in to that. But maybe she needs to take some time and think about how it can be used to, like, her advantage, I suppose. But, yeah, I think she was traumatized that she sunk that low, like that it was a really, you know, whatever.
She felt it was, go ahead. No, you probably have a better question than my statement. I was just going to say something to the effect of, yeah, she just probably thinks it's like a really unnatural form of waterbending that shouldn't be done because it's kind of like turning science into a monstrosity or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know. They all need to sit down and have a think, I think. But Mitch, I know that you were quite concerned or, you know, curious about, you know, how this past the senses of Nickelodeon, but like showing someone just dying,
it's like
Jet's death or whatever, actually showing a human, you know, dying on the ground is not allowed. Like, do you think that this is like the, like, quote unquote, like worst or like morally worst moment in the show?
Well, I would only have to comment up to where we are.
yeah.
As far as we've seen, yes, absolutely. It's not only the visuals, but it is the sound effects. You hear the sounds of blood being bent in someone's body. That's gruesome to the highest degree. That's something I would expect out of a horror movie, really. And it happens in a Y7 show that doesn't show death, because it's just that standard for violence doesn't make sense. Because death is a more natural thing of life, and he dies from blunt force, you know, and that. It's not like he just has, like, a gushing wound or whatever. But this...
Maybe that's why.
What do you mean?
Because it's not like kids are going to start bloodbending. You know,
oh,
what I
like
mean?
This is impossible, but they could really bludgeon someone.
Right. I can see that perspective. I really can. But other than that, it's like I watched this, thankfully, when I was old enough to understand that this was fantasy. But as a child, I wouldn't have understood that all the way. Not that I would have thought that bending was real, but just, you know, your imagination can really take off and give you nightmares and the like when you're seeing something that's pretty horrific and something that you expect to be a safe form of media. And, I mean, growing up, I did expect all of Atla to be a really safe form of media, but this is not a safe episode. This was their Halloween episode for some year, and I don't think that's any justification for why I got through the censors. I just think that someone took a lazy day off at Nickelodeon and just said, whatever, it's kind of spooky, yes, Halloween shit, go for it.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, obviously we don't see any actual blood coming out of bodies. We don't see too much trickling blood in this show in general. But, like, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, what you guys are talking about, like, you know, sucking the actual fluid out of people's bodies and stuff like that, you know, is that something you'd actually want to see on the show? Or like, were you kind of bothered by, like, was anyone, like, you know, viscerally bothered by this? Or were you like, yes, this is so cool? Ariana?
I don't know. I don't think I heard the question correctly.
Okay, I was just, were you sort of flat out enthused by the bloodbending? Like, you guys seem quite excited by it, or were you, like, having the same problems as Mitch in terms of, like, the visceral of it? Like, were you sort of squeaked out by it, or were you just excited by it?
I was just excited by it. I mean, I'm excited by it because I think it makes the world more interesting, and I think it makes Katara more interesting and more powerful because, like, they're fine, Team Avatar. Like, Toph can do the metal bending, so that's really cool. But I think Katara needed something more to show something that she's, like, really a master. Yeah, because she's just kind of, like, master by default, just because they need somebody there who's a waterbender for Aang.
And we really see that, too, because it's the fact that she's able to pick it up, like I was saying in the recap, so quickly when Hama was, like, practicing for years on rats. No, Katara just, like, straight up did it in 2 seconds, and she fought against bloodbending at the same rate, so I don't know how, like, specifically one fights against bloodbending, whether one has to be a bloodbender to be able to do that in the first place, or whether by sheer will you can still force yourself to be able to move. I don't think that's made very clear in this episode, but regardless, Katara's waterbending powers are just so extremely awesome, and to me she's like a Ginny from Harry Potter, where it's like she has just this extreme power and doesn't even seem to recognize it all the way herself, but when she uses it, it's just explosive. It's great.
Let's go around the circle and talk about the worst or most creative thing that you can think of that Katara could do with bloodbending, or people in future, like the limits, like in terms of, you know, whether it's, you know, using a specific organ or you know, something like that. So what would be if Avatar was a horror show, what kind of specific thing would you like to see with the kind of body control that waterbending can do? Mitch, how about you?
You know, one that's come to mind is gland control in form of a mind control, releasing hormones and releasing endorphins or releasing adrenaline to create a certain reaction in someone.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and when I think of that,
you'd, like, make people fall in love.
Right. And when I think of that, and pardon the reference, but I think of Jasper from, wasn't it Jasper in Twilight that was able to control emotions?
Yeah.
That was a superpower. Yeah. And that's what I'm thinking of.
I liked him.
Because I assumed that he was using hormones and the like to do that. So, I mean, like, release a couple of pheromones and Aang and Katara will really get it on or whatever. Like, you know, you could do a lot of this.
Please, no.
Right.
Aang and Katara, are you kidding me?
I was so worried last Aang episode. And Zuko, sorry. I was like, ew, but then thankfully.
Brittany, how about you? What would you like to see? Like the body control waterbending, like, you know, in a more violent world, I suppose.
I don't know, because it's all very disgusting, and I don't like horror movies, so my imagination is not on par with, like, a Saw-type scenario.
I thought you liked horror, like, a lot from American Horror Story.
No, she doesn't. I only watch American Horror Story, and I watch it behind a pillow.
Have we ever had this discussion before?
Why do you watch it?
Yeah.
Because I love the acting, and it's actually not that scary.
That's what all horror feels like once you get into it.
The commercials are so scary. I can't watch it.
I hate gore, and I love Hannibal. Like, I watch Hannibal, and I hate... Like, I was like, guys, am I going to be able to watch it? Because I love the characters, and I love the story. But, like, the imagery of the horror, I hate it. So, yeah, I feel you, Brittany, but, like, yeah.
I do feel like there's a way to desensitize yourself into horror that I've reached to a point where I can watch, like, The Walking Dead or American Horror Story and not be terrified or grossed out anymore. To where, like, 5 years ago, if I was to watch... like this episode of Atla, even I think I would have been more freaked out, but like it's I don't know, the more horror you watch, the more fantasy you see in it, which is either disturbing or good. I'm not sure, because it's like you can see the strings, because I can see the strings, you know, is what I'm saying, behind like a show like American Horror Story. It doesn't, you can see the prosthetics or whatever, and in this show I would always, you just always assume it's fantasy. But imagine if bloodbending was real, goddamn.
Well,
it would make Dandy's job so much easier on American Horror Story, because apparently now he likes to bathe in blood. You know, it would just make his life a lot less messy.
Yeah, I know, less messy.
Just a clown that everyone has a crush on or something.
No, well, we can't spoil. No, what? They have a crush on him.
I won't spoil.
We can't spoil it for you. We can't spoil it for you.
That's in a very public promo. So
yes, it is
sitting in a bathtub of blood. It's disgusting.
Yeah,
but anyway,
that would help out Hannibal too, I'm sure.
Yeah, what evil, like, thing would you do, Brittany?
I would probably redistribute blood to different parts of the body, like either make it all, like, just so to give a quick death. Like, you know, like make it all go to the heart really fast and then, like, that's it. Mm. Or, like, just drain
that
it all.
That sounds very
to, like,
humane.
Or something. Or, you know, like, just push it all to one part of the body.
I feel like that's not humane, Nadia. I feel like that's horrific, because, like...
No, but it would be fast. Yeah. Because once the blood's not going...
It'd be like
anymore.
A heart attack, like, boom.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, like, a heart attack's really that quick. I'd feel like your brain still goes on for quite a while with a heart attack.
Well, it's better than, wait till you get to mine. Mine will be painful, so.
Well, let me just say, this is actually something I've mentioned very, like, tangentially in the show before, which is the weird magic powers that the kid in Aragorn gets, which I don't even remember anything about Aragorn except this, and I remember it because it grossed me out so much. But his magic is trained, like, he's like, oh, instead of blasting someone's whole body, like, learn the physiology of the body so you know, like, you can use your magic to, like, rupture the, like, you know, the nerve in the brain to kill someone instantly.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, very little energy and trauma to just sort of drop someone dead because you've, like, pinched the connecting nerve in their brain or whatever that keeps them
alive. Yeah, like,
I would figure out
what the fast, or, like, where to move the blood, or, like, what to restrict blood flow to, like, make it happen quickly.
Yeah.
Or, you know what I was thinking on top of what you were going with, Brittany, is that you could reverse blood flow. And that deoxygenized blood would keep on hitting the wrong parts and, you know, kind of mix up.
That seems very slow.
It would be very slow. It's a form of torture.
Ew! Okay. Ariana, how about you? I know this is going to be good.
Okay, well, putting my Azula hat on, what's most effective?
All right.
Well, I really love what we have been saying all along, which is where you, like, literally suck out all the water from somebody, because then not only do they die, but you get to, like, use that water as, like, a defense for other things. So you could do that slowly, and it would be painful, or you could do it quickly, and that would be...
Holy shit!
Like, to kill someone quickly.
Did you write a Saw movie or something? Like,
no. The other one would be to, like, drown someone with their own, like, their own water in their body or their own blood. That would be slow and painful.
Holy fuck.
Ew, that's gross.
I never thought of that. That's like, yeah, that's very Azula. I'll give you that much. I'm glad we can swear in this podcast, because holy crap.
Can we? Oh, we meant to.
No.
That's been a debate. We usually try not to.
I couldn't help it. That was dark. That was, yeah.
All right. So, do we think that Katara will use the bloodbending in future? Like, that, you know, this is something in her arsenal that she'll, like, now use to fight against the Fire Lord or Azula or Zuko or, you know, whoever she needs to defend herself from? Like, what kind of situation do you guys think that she would use this again in the future? Like, Brittany, do you foresee... Oh, sorry, Ariana, go on.
Oh, no, let Brittany talk. I'm just yammering about...
I was going to say, yeah, Katara, do you see her using this in the future?
Well, I do, because why would they show it to us? I feel like if it wasn't going to come back again, I don't think they would have planted this.
But she was crying at the end. I feel like she might be, too wuss to do it, like, she'll think about it, and then she'll be like, no, I have to be like, honor.
Well, maybe she'll tell Aang about it, and Aang will use it. So maybe Katara won't use it.
Toph wouldn't use it.
And Natalie, no.
Toph would have no problems.
Natalie, here's a moment, though, where, like, I wish I could speculate with them, and they wouldn't believe that what I'm saying is true. Because there's so, like, much more.
You ruined that for yourself, Mitch.
Yeah. I know what you mean. You're like, in theory, right. I can see it happening like this, but, like, because you know for a fact either way, then right. It doesn't count. Yeah.
Right,
because
it would be so interesting to have this discussion with you guys, because it's just, like, this is such an in-depth little bit that we're getting into right here. It's very deep in this lore, so in the science too. This is okay. Rewatchable does go into science when it comes to Atla, because you can. This show does allow you to do that. Pushing Daisies didn't, all right, but this show maybe, can.
Yeah, maybe she'll finally like use it to like bloodbend Zuko to her. So
yeah,
like
yeah,
the endorphins and stuff.
Like, so you definitely mentioned like moving bits of blood around to like to people's bodies. So I'm just saying it could be like a form of Viagra, the bloodbending.
Oh no. I was
any blood there.
See, I held that back, Natalie.
You guys did say that there's a sex scene coming in every episode. I think I was convinced. I was convinced it was going to be in Nightmares and Daydreams. Like, I was so sure. And it didn't happen.
That's part of the daydreams, right? Or the nightmares. Oh.
Okay, you guys might be disappointed. I mean, it's not a sex scene, but no. It's certainly an implied.
It's implied. It's not like...
I better at least get my hashtag Zutara kiss, Mitch, so...
Oh,
hashtag okay. The beach, hashtag the beach.
What was I going to say? Bloodbending. Oh, yeah. Ariana, if Katara, like, you know, if she was or wasn't to use this again in the future, like, which one would make you, like, her, like, rise in your esteem more? Do you want her to? Are you like, yeah, do this? Or are you like, Katara, you're a wimp if you don't?
I do think she's kind of a wimp if she doesn't. I think that she has an obligation to, like, make herself disciplined enough to learn how to use this for good. Because I do think that from what we've seen right now in this episode, it doesn't have to be used for evil. You can use it to stop people in a much more humane way than killing them.
Yes, I suppose so. But some people, I guess, would argue that, like, controlling people is, like, worse.
It is.
Killing.
It's, well...
I don't know how I feel about
it. I would rather
it.
Be... Well, I don't know. I'm not going to say things like that. But I think that, like, controlling Azula would be better than killing her.
Mm-hmm.
At least for, like, until you put her in prison.
Mm-hmm. And then she can be killed. No,
well,
no.
Here's
kill Azula. She could be saved.
Here's a good question. Do we think that no matter the evil, from whatever form of bending, that someone on the show would kill to stop the evil, or is this a world that does not believe in capital punishment? Like, I don't know. Can we go to say, like,
I mean,
any...
They won't even kill Jet, so... I don't know.
Oh, you're saying, like, the show itself won't kill Jet, but I'm talking about, yeah. Like, do you think a character in the show would kill another character?
I don't think Aang would kill anybody.
No?
Definitely not Aang. Yeah, I think the Fire Nation definitely kills people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What about someone like Sokka or Toph, who's kind of like, you know...
Morally gray?
Not morally gray. Like, they're good, but they're like, would I kill these people for the greater good / to defend my, you know, friends and stuff like that?
I think they would be willing to. I mean, I think Sokka definitely would. He's a warrior. They do.
I do think there's going to come a point,
Natalie.
But it's
like different... There's difference between like killing someone in war and like, say if they caught Zuko... Which
yeah, like
they're obviously
one-off,
going
like,
to, yeah. And they're like, what do we do with him? Do we kill him right now or just, like,
yeah.
keep
basically
him
executing him as opposed yeah. to killing in a battle. Yeah, yeah.
Right. That's what I was more referencing. I don't know when we should do this, Natalie, but I think there should come a point where we should say to the newbies, you know, like, give us your death tallies. Who's going to make it past the finale? Kind of deal.
Oh my god.
No, I'm just talking about like not who's going to be killed by like capital punishment. Like, I'm just talking like in battle or whatever.
I think everyone who's not Fire Nation will make it.
Yeah.
Fire Nation, that's where it gets a little...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's going to have to be some people who sacrifice themselves for the greater good.
I think Azula will sacrifice herself to save her brother.
Oh my gosh, that's wow. beautiful. That's beautiful, Brittany.
Azula has an interesting story.
She has a very interesting story.
Yeah, she has an interesting story, and I am actually... It's another thing about Avatar that has always really impressed me, the handling of Azula's story. It's something I haven't really seen in television before.
Well, I mean, I don't think we're going too far to even talk about the beach again. Just, you know, like what we've seen so far of her story with her mother and, you know, her calling her yeah. monster. Like, that's pretty disturbing. So I think that's one of the biggest points in my mind that I think of when I think of, like, you know, the twistedness of Azula.
Let's move on to Hama herself. So did anyone sort of think that she was a bad guy, you know, from the beginning? Like, you know, did you start suspecting like that she was a creepy evil woman, and then were you lulled into a false sense of security, or did you think she was bad? Were you expecting this kind of badness all the way through?
Of course you're expecting the badness. First of all, they're, like, in the woods alone, and then they're telling, like, these creepy stories, and then this woman's just like, oh, hey, hello, I'm going to, like, let you lodge with me for free and all this stuff. And I'm like, I'm totally on Sokka's side with that.
And speaking of which, Katara may not be able to tell jokes, but, man, she rocks those ghost stories. She is terrifying.
Yeah, that was scary.
I know. Yeah, that one still just creeped me out. What was it about? It was, like, her, mother had
like
a
Mimi,
friend
like was frozen or something.
Like a
Mimi
ghost.
Was such a scary name for that story. It's like, yeah.
But I didn't get really like what was supposed to be happening in that story, because it was just like all of Nini's family disappeared, but just Nini was in front of the fire saying it's cold.
Yeah.
Was she the last survivor, or was
she's
she
a ghost
at that part?
She's a ghost.
So she was a ghost at that part in the story. I don't
Who
know.
Thought that Hama was Nini?
Oh my gosh, that would have been great.
Yeah,
that would have been great.
Yeah, good point, Natalie.
I was a little disappointed that Katara wasn't like, you were there, like, and she's like, she didn't even ask if she knew her grand. Well, I was like, dude, this is like the first Southern Water Tribe person you've run into in like a long time besides your dad. Be like, hey, do you know grand? She probably did.
Yeah.
It seemed like a small
Yeah, family. I was surprised she didn't ask either.
Although grand grew up in the north, didn't she? Because she like left.
Yeah,
look at you, newbie. Holy crap.
But she still probably would. Oh no, she was probably captured by the time she came down.
Yeah,
like she arrived and she was captured that day.
Well, no, because she was captured when she was still like young, and I think she looked about the same age that Gran was in that flashback when she went to the Southern Water Tribe.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. Like Gran had no time to like settle down in the South. I don't know why we even consider her having a home there, because I feel like she was imprisoned for that whole time. She was risen in the North completely, if you ask me.
Yeah, she was, but she moved to the South, and she has been there since...
Yeah, what we're on...
Oh,
yeah,
she wasn't a waterbender, so she wasn't captured. Never mind.
No.
No,
yeah.
my brain
yeah,
got that
like,
confused.
Yeah, that's the thing. She's not a bender, and she may have moved there after all of the benders got captured or whatever. But anyway, what was she planning, Hama, not Gran, what was Hama planning on doing with all of those like people that she put inside the mountain? Did she just feel like trapping people because she got trapped? Like, what was the rationale?
I thought that was what it was. It was just like, that was the only way she knew how to like retaliate. Like, I had to sit there and figure it out. You can sit here and figure it out. Because everyone in the Fire Nation is part of the problem. Like, that's just her mindset.
I just assumed it was because, like, it made the most sense to get the story done quickly, half an hour. Because, really, I feel like she probably would have just, like, thrown them all. I thought it was, like, a volcano she was making them all jump into.
Throw them into a lava pit?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Because I was also thinking, I was like, but they're all just tied up there. Like, where do they go to the bathroom? How do they eat? Like, what's going on?
Like, did she just bring them food? Like, do they know? Like,
right.
It was
Maybe
her,
she
like...
likes to taunt them.
Oh, and you know what's funny, too? I should mention while we're on Imprisoned Villagers that I refrain from making any UA references whatsoever in my show notes, because I expected someone to come up with one by now. But it's I just came to my mind that I didn't mention her when I was about to say that those prisoners were definitely there for, like, years, because she would take, like, it seems like one or two every full moon, one full moon per month, and there were, like, 20 in there. So some people were there for, like, over a year. She must have, like, really been...
She's crazy.
Yeah, I know. And then Yue is just responsible for all this. We can always go back to her in this series. I never knew I could until I started seeing the lines connecting everything.
She's annoying and kind of boring, but, like, let's not blame her. She is a nice person.
Yue?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think it's
Yue's definitely fault. The worst of Sokka's girlfriends.
But it's just weird how much the moon...
Dead and alive.
If she were there a year ago, Yue hasn't been the moon for that long, has she? Because, like, they were in the Northern Water Tribe less than a year ago.
Who knows with this timeline?
I think Natalie would, because I know that you're really into this timeline, Natalie, and how they grew up and what they looked like. And haven't they said 2 years have passed since the beginning of the series?
No, it's only been 1 year.
Summer. So they're like, yeah. They've been saying summer since forever.
Oh, it's just weird because they grew up so fast with, like, their Fire Nation clothes that I feel like years have passed.
They're going through puberty. People, like, have growth spurts and...
All of them all at once? all four of them?
Yeah, they're all, like, the same age, almost.
Yeah, I don't think they've aged, like, dramatically. I think it's been, like, less than a year, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so... We learn a little bit about Hammer's backstory, and sort of we can see why Katara would be pissed about the Northern Water Tribe, because what we see from, like, you know, back in the day is that, like, women and men were equal waterbenders in the South Pole Tribe. So, which I think we kind of knew, like, given Katara's reaction in general, but it was interesting to see it. And we see that they were the ones that put that, like, that historical ship in the iceberg, you know, that we see at Katara and Sokka's home.
Does this make you want to just get to know more of those other women waterbenders? Because Katara is, like, the only woman waterbender we have in Atla in the entirety of the series. I can't think of another. There's healers in the north. And there's Hama.
Yeah, we don't see too many, like, attacky ones, you know, like, ones who are trained in that way.
Do we have any men waterbenders other than Aang? We have the master guy?
I mean, the North Pole ones. Yeah, right. We don't see the South Pole ones until later, I guess. Not in this series. There are South Pole benders in Korra. But I don't think we see any in this one at all, actually.
I guess I think we should be feeling...
Well, because Hara's the last one, isn't she? Which now makes sense since they took all of them.
Yeah. But what any theories about why they didn't kill them? Like, about why they, you know, if because obviously they're like, oh, we wiped out the airbenders because we're getting rid of the next avatar, like, but then, so the next one would be born into water. So do you think they captured all the benders in order to, like, oh, one of them might be the avatar? Or do you think they captured them for, oh, we don't want them to fight against us, or both?
Well, they wouldn't kill them because of the avatar, because that's why they killed the airbenders.
Yeah, but then a new one, like, if they manage to kill the new avatar from the airbenders, you know, they are, you know, the next one will then be born into water, like, you know, if they've killed the new avatar.
But I thought that they were convinced that they had eliminated the possibility of the avatar chain being passed on, so they didn't...
Oh, they thought they killed the airbenders before they could breed a new avatar,
I'm not sure.
Well, also,
then, like, when they were going over, like, the plan, they were like, when they were doing the history, that history episode where he was reading about it, they're like, then they destroyed the air temples because then it eliminated. And then I think they just went after the water tribe just to get rid of the benders, because the benders would be the ones who could be the only shot against them. And the Northern Water Tribe, like, was just still had a stronghold with keeping them out, so they just didn't get to those benders yet.
Well, back to, like, the Avatar and the Fire Lord that you were referencing, Brittany, I think it was pretty apparent, maybe just by imagery, that Aang was anointed by the Avatar spirit, the new Avatar, when he was born, from the way it was that, you know, the Crescent Island was made as Roku was dying in the fumes, and then it, like, cut to the next shot of Aang being born to his parents, right?
Yeah, but then they killed the whole Avatar area and there were no survivors, but that's because Aang was in an ice cube.
Right. So essentially what we're saying is... okay, no, I was confused. I thought you were saying that they were cutting off the Avatar cycle completely and that they were never going to see another Avatar at all because they killed off all the air nomads before there was a chance to breed a new Avatar. But then I was like, wait.
No. But I think that they think that there's, like, no Avatar because they just found out that the Avatar's alive.
Right. No, I'm with you now.
They're not
but then why was Zuko searching for the Avatar, like, before Aang came back to life? He was already searching for the Avatar before...
Well, that was just a fool's errand. That was just his father putting him on a wild goose chase to be like, well, you're never gonna get back your honor, bitch. To be like, go away, I hate you. You know, and that's all I ever took it as.
Oh, I don't know, but... actually, Natalie makes a good point. I could be wrong. Like, I've only watched the series once. I would trust you guys over me. Tell me I'm wrong. I'm totally fine with that.
Well, I don't know either way. The point, mainly though, like, why do you think they didn't just kill the waterbenders? Why were they being kept in that prison?
Maybe because they had plans for them later on.
Do you think they could force them to fight for them?
No, and then when they didn't, they would just kill them.
No, they don't have bloodbending.
Yeah, they can't physically force them. I mean, they could burn them. They could be like, I shoot fire at you till you do the thing. But, you know, who knows?
I mean, kind of like how they were training Appa, unfortunately, to go back to that horrid storyline. Not that it was bad written storyline. It was just disturbing.
It doesn't make sense because water seems like the one that would be most combative. Like, it would be most bad for them since they're fire. But I don't know. I just kind of assumed it was because they wanted her to be angry and in the prison. And learn to bloodbend.
Well, if you think about it...
It is a bit of a, you know, they needed an excuse for the storyline, I suppose.
Yeah, well, if you think about it, though, it up until bloodbending and everything else that Hama created, which was also, we didn't even mention, like, you know, she takes water from the air, not even from, like, your sweat, but just from the air, and the flowers, of course, as we've kind of seen with the swamp people. But, I mean, Hama seemed to be the exception. Those waterbenders were able to be held in prison by the firebenders because they only, like, barely fed them water, and that was it. They kept the rooms dry. They need, like, specifically water in the room, it seems, and firebenders can just produce it wherever they want. So it makes more sense that they're the more dominant type of bending because they don't really have to, like, worry about when they can accept it, you know?
Yeah, they produce it from internally as opposed to using like an external like source. Air is also like there is air everywhere, except air is, you know, you'd have to get really creative to make that, you know, combative. You could definitely like choke someone or like, you know, push them around. You could make it combative, but because we've seen the air nomads,
you could fill their lungs with it and explode them.
Yeah, I don't think the air nomads would go in for that, but... Oh my god, I totally forgot my favorite moment in the next episode. I put down the wrong thing. I'd forgotten my favorite.
And
sorry,
I think,
it just reminded me.
Anyway. I think now's a good moment to... I don't know. Natalie, you can stop me if you think this is anything of a spoiler. I sincerely don't think it is. I wrote an article during the Sept Bender when Korra was coming back about all the different types of bendings being able to do their own form of blood bending. And I went through the science of it. Now, I don't think for the sanctity of time we'd have time to go through them all. But maybe everyone can give me like a thumbs up for what I came up with for at least mine. And this is where I'm saying you can stop me now, Natalie.
And how could this possibly be a spoiler?
Only because it could or could have happened. I don't know. Because everything I speculate about, you know what I mean?
Oh, I suppose.
Yeah, so I could stop there.
By saying that it's speculation, you're kind of implying that it didn't happen. But that I don't know.
Or maybe I'm not.
How about I speculate and then you tell me.
Oh, that's great.
That was something you wrote about. I think, like firebending, it makes sense you could do it because people are full of heat. So you might be able to work with something. I think you'd have to get more creative than bloodbending. But I think you could do something like that. You definitely make someone self-combust. We've already talked about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're talking about like being able to like control someone's body with bending, not just like, oh, I'm, you know, puppeting you around, but like the actual working with the body.
Like the muscles, we should say, in the blood or whatever. Like a bloodbender, like equivalent to what a bloodbender does in water bending.
Maybe with somebody's like lungs for airbending? I don't know.
Yeah.
This is hard.
It's very hard.
Or like making the oxygen in their blood explode or like, you know, like something like that.
Well, you guys keep talking about ways you just want to kill them. I'm just talking about controlling them, like explosions aside.
What about Earth? Mitch, tell me what you had for Earth.
Can I just say the Earth one?
Aren't smart enough
iron and zinc and any of their like earthy minerals inside the bloodstream.
Mitch, you're so smart.
And bones, like calcium.
That's terrible.
I know, but it would work. That's it would totally work. Can I just give you guys my other ones, please?
Yeah, what are you?
All right.
Okay, electricity inside of you from firebenders that controls neurons and controls muscles. So bam, done.
Great.
And then lastly, this airbending is kind of like, it's not too sophisticated. It's just like controlling the air currents around them to make their body move in certain ways by just keeping a really quick stream around their body. So like, you know, move the air current, move their arm or...
You are so great, Mitch. As the fictional Azula, I would make you like my Smee.
Oh my god. This is horrible, but okay.
I loved my electricity ones and my earthbending ones. I thought that those were so creative.
That's so gross.
It is gross, though.
To finish off our discussion of this episode, I just wanted to also say, like, Hama, do you think that, like, from the start, like, we saw her as kind of an, you know, quote-unquote innocent waterbender defending the tribe. Do you think, like, that prison turned her crazy and evil, or do you think that she always had that capacity? I don't know how much we know about her to be able to make that call, but just seeing her reactions, like, you know, no one else looked at the rats and was like, ooh, I could control them. Like, do you think Hama is, like, a psychopath, like, regardless, or do you think it's because of what happened to her?
I don't think she's a psychopath. I think that she went crazy and mad like people tend to do when they're being tortured. And maybe she was just a little bit brighter than everyone else. So she was like, I can torture you back.
Brittany, how about you? Did you feel like the flashbacks of her before, I guess, before her imprisonment, that she seemed like a nice young lady? Or do you think that she was always going to be somewhat sinister?
No, I think she was fine. She was, like, willing. It wasn't like she was, like, any leagues ahead of any of the other waterbenders. She always seemed to be part of, like, the pack. She just happened to not get captured until the very end, so.
Yeah.
I don't think there was anything inherently bad about her. It was definitely an effect of being captured and seeing it as, like, a last resort.
And how sad was it, too, just seeing, like, the other waterbenders fading away into having it be just her? Because it's like you had a good face to each one of them, you know? You could see him dead on, and then they're just fading away. It's almost like when somebody loved me in Toy Story 2. It's like, you know, slowly the toys fade away, and it's just...
It makes me my God!
those kind of shots really make me sad. It's probably because of that movie. That movie was traumatizing.
All right, yes. We're going to our favorite scenes of this episode and then the quotes. Mine was Aang and Sokka's response to being bloodbended, like when, you know, Katara has to defend them basically and, you know, tie them to the trees and stuff and you know, move them. And Sokka's just like, Aang, stop. And she's like, I'm sorry. And Aang's like, it's okay. And I found that quite amusing, like Katara having to, like, you know, help them by sort of, I guess, defending them against themselves. And I liked that. Do we want to go down the list in order for this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like Brittany's too, especially for her.
Ariana's yelling at me on Twitter for not paying attention because I'm watching the red carpet.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Is Chris Evans there?
Not yet. Benedict Cumberbatch just got there, though.
It's Golden Globes night for anyone that's listening in the
it's
near
Golden Globes
in the
night,
future.
So. It's my favorite awards show, and I don't have a live stream. Like, I don't even know if Australia's airing it, like, live.
But actually, Natalie, I was at a party last year for the Golden Globes, and we didn't have cable, and we live streamed it from Australia.
Oh, wow. Like, okay. We usually don't get the carpet. Like, we usually... don't get any. That's fine. Just let's carry on so we can get okay. to it.
So
yeah, sorry.
This week was Sherlock Sokka take two, because I love when he's on a mission and no matter what Katara is trying to tell him, he doesn't listen because he has like his investigative hat on. So when he was going through Hama's house, I just loved every second of that. And he's like, you know, like Toph's like helping him make a key, and he's like very invested, and he's like, something's not right. So that was my favorite scene.
What about those creepy puppets, those marionettes that fell out?
Those were not explained at all.
So maybe she's making those like out of those are models of her prisoners. And maybe she's like believing some kind of voodoo
with
them or something.
Maybe those are the people, like they've had all of the water sucked out of their
bodies. Oh, stop!
Like, they're the people that have had all of the water sucked out. Like, the, and that you get the that small in the cave.
Like, you're a shrunken head.
Yeah. Yeah, that totally happens.
Like, you can shrink people that's down it. To that small. That's a thing.
Well, if you sucked, if they dried up and they're all shriveled, yeah.
I don't get how shrunken heads work, but I guess that it's to the same effect.
Ew, anyway.
Yeah.
Let's move on. Ariana, how about you?
Mine was when we did bloodbending, or when we learned about bloodbending. I was like, oh, this is so cool.
My favorite class today was when we did bloodbending.
You sounded so sweet and innocent when you were talking about it, too. It was really great. That's something like Mai would say.
This episode is going to make me sound like a psychopath. I promise. I am not. I really do not condone violence in any way.
You know, everyone says they see more Zula in you. I see more Ty Lee. Like, you talk in a really similar fashion to her. Even about you horrible things.
Your voice reminds me of Azula.
Really?
Because
it's like the sweetness anyway. You convey even saying, like, oh, Sokka, you're cute, and then, like, stabbing him with your fingers.
Oh, God. Mitch, what about you?
Yeah, mine's the moment I talked about before where Katara realizes she's more powerful than Hama. She's, like, crying for, like, 2 seconds, then she's like, lol, wait, and then she just owns her. It's great. You're not the only one that draws power from the moon. It was so Dragon Ball Z. It was great.
Yeah, so, I mean, we do get more and more implication that Katara is not just the average waterbender, and I don't know if it's just because she's, like, young and, like, powerful because she has energy, but, like, that she is actually powerful compared to other waterbenders, which is interesting, and, you know, mm-hmm. we have the best earthbender, and I guess Katara is the best waterbender, and I don't know.
Aang's the,
what's best average?
The best avatar, I guess. The, he's definitely the best airbender.
Yeah. Oh, God.
What's Sokka? Poor Sokka.
You know, like, all the best everythings now, because, like, Azula and Iroh are the best fire, and then...
Yeah.
True.
Purely from a speculative point, and not from a, I know this happens or anything like that point, because it's not what I'm saying, but newbies, how awesome would that aspect, because you're right, because I believe Iroh and Azula are just as strong as each other, how awesome would that duel be? Just,
Iroh
you know?
And Azula. What about, like... Like, what about the fire Ozai
can't
itself?
Do lightning. Whatever. That's where Zuko gets his lightning from.
We haven't seen anything. We've barely seen Ozai. We don't know too much about him at this point.
And Ozai is not the ancestor of an avatar, whereas Zuko and Azula are, but Iroh, I suppose, isn't either. Iroh's just good. Iroh, we will learn more about why he is so good.
Maybe because he's so, like, zen, so he, like, can channel all of them, like the avatar.
Right, well, he kind of is, like, the firebending avatar, in that one episode he's trying to teach Zuko about lightning, and he's, you know, going through...
I got this from waterbenders, right. And, you know, I traveled and socialized with other people.
I bet it has something to do with the lotus.
Right. Yeah. What's Azula's excuse? She's batshit insane and she'll do anything?
She's gifted.
Yeah,
she comes from
gifted.
The Avatar and the Fire Lord, just like Zuko does. But Zuko hasn't learned how to be badass yet because he's a wimp. so, anyway, favorite quotes. Mine was definitely when Sokka snapped at Toph about the moon spirit turning mean. And he says, the moon spirit is a gentle, loving lady. She rules the sky with compassion and lunar goodness. Again, nice little, you know, Sokka hung up.
I love moment. I love when you quote Sokka. You do it really well.
Yeah. Me?
Yeah, because you get really excited.
I sound so much like him, yeah.
No, it's just like the excitement in your voice is so cute because you just get so giddy to talk about Sokka. I love it.
Does Toph know that the moon is... She doesn't know, right? That the moon is Sokka's ex-girlfriend?
Hopefully they filled her in by now.
Because she, like, burned her without even meaning to.
Yeah.
And she's probably just mean.
What's their ship? Is it Toka? Toka, I think. But I'm sure that to that effect, you could probably spin it in this way that she does know about the moon and that she's, like, purposefully doing it to get Sokka on her side. To be like, well, yeah, that's your old girlfriend and look at her. She's crazy, so stay with me.
You know. Trying to turn Sokka against his old girlfriend.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, you'd think that someone would have had that conversation with her by now, but maybe not. Brittany, how about you for quotes?
Mine was when Sokka is walking away and they're, like, listening. They just finished the story and stuff, and he's like, this just reeks of Spirit World shenanigans. Because he, like, he just needs to get a little dig in against, like, you know, it kind of half being Aang's fault, being like, well, you're part of the spirit world, and this just reeks of something that you guys would do.
Oh, I really liked as well. I think that it was in this episode. It was like I'd forgotten about it till this moment, but just the throwback to when Sokka was in the spirit world before, when he's like, do they have bathrooms in the spirit world? And Sokka's like, I can tell you for a fact that they don't, because yeah. He runs back. He's like, I've needed to go to the bathroom for 4 days. Like, such a good throwback. Just saying.
I didn't even catch that.
Go to the spirit world?
Hey, the giant panda. Remember Save the Whales you wrote?
Yes. Sokka went into the spirit world?
Yeah, and Aang had to go get him.
He got stolen by Hei Bai.
Yeah, and he was stuck there, and he runs back.
Oh.
Oh my god, I need to go to the bathroom. I've been there for, 4 days or whatever. So I really liked when, do they have bathrooms? Like, I can tell you for a fact that they don't. Anyway, sorry, go on with the quotes, everyone.
Am I next?
Yeah.
Mine was just a little cute talk moment, because now they're like my new Zutara. I'm going to find them everywhere. So it was when they were like looking down at they're like listening for the voices, and Sokka's like, I can't see anything down there because it's pitch black. And she goes, that's why you have me. And then they all hold hands and jump in, and it was so cute.
Yeah, that was pretty cute. That was adorable. And I mean, would these people have ever been saved if not for Toph?
Probably not.
Who would have heard these screams underneath the ground?
They would have become corn husk puppets.
Yeah, they would have. That's what she's using them for. I've decided.
Yeah.
And then my quote is kind of weird that we're looking at Hama in like a semi-positive light in this quote. Maybe we aren't, because she says to Katara before shit goes down, "You would have me use my feminine charms to take advantage of that man? I can tell we're going to get along swimmingly."
Interesting.
Well, that's funny, because I definitely think Katara does that on purpose.
Yeah, she does.
Yes, definitely.
Remember when she was trying to find out where the bending battles happened for the Earth Kingdom, and that's how they found Toph, and then she like basically was like, hey boys, and then she froze them in ice.
She did it in the next episode when Aang wouldn't sleep. She's like, do it for me.
Blink, blink. Yeah. I don't know, Katara and her feminine wiles, we'll see. She's certainly very, she's got the hair and she's got the big eyes, so we'll see.
Yeah, especially now that it's like long and down and illustrious. Yeah, the way she has it now.
Yeah.
It's on purpose.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Let's go into the next episode, Nightmares and Daydreams. So in this one, Aang has nightmares and daydreams. Go to sleep, kid. The invasion's not for another 4 days. It's not like you're going to learn firebending that fast. The gang sits cliffside at a spot Katara and Sokka's father designated as a meetup. Aang eventually remembers his pants and sleeps through the night. Meanwhile, Zuko lives a posh, affluent life, full of foot massages, hot towels, and not being invited to warm meetings. May is much softer in demeanor since hashtag the beach, and Azula gets royal hair combings. So this episode mainly one of the biggest aspects of it is Aang keeps falling asleep and having different dreams about, meeting the Fire Lord. And according to Wikipedia, the episode pays homage to several movies such as Lord of the Rings, The Ring, The Grudge, Nightmare on Elm Street, and several other fantasy and dream-related movies, which I didn't really know anything about those. I only know about the different, video game characters or anime characters
that he appears as
in the dream, which Mitch can tell us a bit more about. But did you guys know anything about the sort of dream homage sequences at all? Mitch, do you know anything about that?
Well, you could easily say that A Nightmare on Elm Street with Ozai kind of appearing in the real world is a lot like Freddy Krueger, because Freddy Krueger would eventually leech his way into the real world if you believed he was real or something like that, as fantasy melded with reality. And I'm really sad that I couldn't pick out The Ring or The Grudge at all. And now that I'm seeing Lord of the Rings, I just keep on thinking that there had to been like a Gollum moment, but there wasn't. Because like, what else would have related?
I don't know if it's got to do with like the dreams and waking up. I would have to look into that more. Mm-hmm. But
wouldn't it be more like Frodo having those like nightmarish sequences whenever he touches the ring?
Yeah,
A Gollum moment. I think it was more of along the lines of like themes of having these type of dream sequences. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, like in those popular media, you have, and you probably could find the scenes that, you know, went one to one with this episode of Avatar if you really cared to, because I know there was a lot, because that, and that's why, okay, I just have to say this straight up. I don't like this episode. I don't like reference episodes at all. I think they're silly. I think they're pointless, and they're a waste of time because they're just there to, like, pay homage to other series, and then you lose the plot of the episode in that, as this did, because, like, what happened? Nothing.
Yeah,
like,
there was no fair enough
schedule. They have 4 days left, and they ended up still being 4 days ahead of schedule. That's all it did.
Yeah, go suck a schedule.
Yeah, go suck a schedule. Seriously.
Killing that. The nightmares are the most obvious sort of homage, like with the different animation styles from various other shows and games, which I don't know too much about. I recognize the Dragon Ball Z one in the first one, and I sort of knew visually a couple of the other ones. Mitch, are you able to tell us anything about most of those?
Yeah, definitely. I did research amongst what I knew already, because I have to admit, some of these were a little bit obscure. And the first one is where Aang forgets his pants, and then he looks very evidently like Goku, the main character from Dragon Ball Z. So that's just plain and simple the way it was, that one. The second one was a little bit more obscure, and I'm surprised they did this. Vash the Stampede was a really popular anime and manga in Japan. I don't know if it really ever made its way over to the States, so that's probably why we don't know it. But that's the character he was dressed up as, who's like a renegade or to some effect that saves people in towns that he travels around to. So that might have been the reference they were trying to make with Aang. So that's what he's dressed up as in the second dream, and he runs in a similar fashion to Naruto in like it's like this ninja sprint with a lot of dust up to Ozai at one point. And that's the math test one, if you want to like put your mind in that. You know, I didn't think of this. There's a really trippy one where Momo shushes him, and it's like the super long one that doesn't necessarily, you know, have the confrontation between Ozai and Aang like the other two did. And that probably had more references for The Ring and The Grudge and Nightmare on Elm Street 2, because I mean, not that I've seen all 20 Nightmare on Elm Streets, but I've seen enough to know that that felt like that, kind of like where didn't like Toph fall down into the ground, like that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Oh, and then Ariana's writing that she thinks that the second dream was more like Yu-Gi-Oh! No, that's not Yu-Gi-Oh!
Are you sure? He had Yu-Gi-Oh! Hair.
No, that was Vash the Stampede. I compared the characters.
Whatever. I think that
it's like random anime. I'd never heard of it.
It's a matter of opinion.
It can be a matter of opinion. I'll give you that much. All right, that's fair. And then lastly, the last dream doesn't really have anything in particular other than I think it's just like Aang as is and Ozai as his mind would imagine him, where Aang just remembers his pants and it's the end of the episode. So those are his nightmares and the best explanation that I can give.
Fair enough. So how did everyone... how did everyone think about the different treatment of Aang, like how to help him like relax and sleep? Like, do you think that his reactions, I guess, first of all, were valid? Like that he was like right to be like stressed and freaking out? Sokka makes a good point about him not needing firebending because all the firebenders aren't going to be able to firebend either. But do you think that Aang is prepared for this invasion and taking on the Fire Lord? Or do you think that he was right to be worried, I guess? I mean, you're always going to be a bit worried, but like that his kind of obsessive, crazy, like, I've got to train, and was like, is that what you'd be doing?
I can definitely understand because they got there so early. And so before this, like, his mind has been occupied. But it's kind of how, like, the waiting for something is so much worse than the actual. It's like when you're in it, you're like, the adrenaline is going. But, like, he has 4 days to sit there and think about how he's a 12-year-old kid ready to take on the whole world.
Yeah.
I mean, think
granted, he could have paid more attention to Sokka's schedule and, like, knew that it would be... when they arrived, he could have been like, oh my gosh, I only have 4 days left, besides being like caught off guard. But at the same time, they had a lot going on, and it was probably better for him not to focus on it, as we saw here.
Yeah, they were just like blood bent to shit, so I guess that, you know, maybe your brain's a bit frazzled after that. Maybe these are the after effects.
I'm so impressed that they got there so fast, because they were like behind schedule, but then Sokka must have pulled some strings.
Yeah, well, they must have started going to the bathroom and eating at the same time.
But not in the spirit world.
Ew. So, yeah, basically we have some different solutions from the gang. Katara wants to do, like, relaxation yoga. She goes to, like, hot yoga with him inside the spring. You know, she makes him all hot and steamy, and, you know, they're all in their naked bathing suits. So how did that ever make everyone feel?
Okay, I have to...
How was this for you? Oh, no, sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say, I have to admit, before this scene started, when she's like, I know how to make you relax, I was like, like...
You're probably tensing him more up, actually.
I know.
To us,
she said it very adult-y. She was like, "I know how to make you relax." So,
I mean, to that effect.
Brittany, what did you think about the actual scene?
I mean, I thought it was fine once they were actually doing yoga. Because I was like, "Oh, that's pretty smart." Like, he probably should do some like stretches and relax. And I thought it would help.
Well, I can see if we're going on the string of our mind in the gutter, and I'll keep this PG, how Aang really probably was getting more stressed out by this situation, because it's more of a tease, if anything, and I don't know.
Oh,
like,
my God!
She really should have just, like, taken one for the team.
That's horrible.
I'm kidding.
Zuko was her first love. She's not allowed to cheat on him. Don't forget it.
No, Zutara forever.
Zutara forever. Don't ruin it. We just keep the fantasy
anyway,
going.
Anyway. Yeah, so Katara the tease doing her stretchy, sweaty yoga in her bikini. I mean, that must have been great for Bang. But then Toph's approach is a bit different. She's going to do some, like, hardcore massage and acupuncture. Like, she makes that little, like, bed of rocks to massage him with, which is fun. Who wants to turn on that thing?
Well,
no one.
I mean, it might be relaxing.
Like, maybe if she turned down the intensity level from like a 10 to like a 1. I remember, maybe you guys have used this before. I felt like Aang once when I had this these, like, you know, when you have like a heart attack, to put like a defibrillator on you, and you have little like parts that they like plug in to make sure you get electricity in the right spots. My friend has one that's supposed to massage you, where you put those on yourself and it twitches your muscles. Okay.
Yeah.
I know, it was bad. And my friend put it up to 10 on me, and like, I've never had a seizure, but I felt like I was having one. I probably was.
I feel like that's not safe.
Oh, it wasn't. It was bought in Las Vegas, so it definitely wasn't safe. And it was like electrical impulses kind of going through me in a weird way. I felt like Aang in that moment. I could relate. And maybe like, it was good at like level 1 or 2, maybe. But like, I had it up to 10. I think he had it up to like 50. So I would have died. I never would have made it. I had baby skin like Aang.
Yeah, and then you've asked as well how she knew where the porcupine was, because she can feel the earth around it. She knows
it was
what's
like,
inside the earth.
It was like so specific. She knew it like so far away. Like, I didn't think that she would really be that.
She's brilliant, Mitch.
Like, how far can her sight really go?
Mofoing earthbender.
Well, maybe that was like the only animal around, and she could tell by its like little scrapes on the ground that it was a porcupine.
And she's like, how convenient. Boom!
Yeah, how convenient.
I would not let her give me acupuncture with a porcupine.
And you know what I learned in the Wikipedia on this episode? That was the same type of animal that Appa had the spike stuck in his face with right before Suki died. So that was a baby version
Suki.
It was a baby version of that animal that tortured our poor Appa.
So were they like koala sheep?
Yes, I love them. They're like one of my favorites. I love the combination sheep, or the combination animals in general. But yeah, these are koala sheep, and I love them. So, which brings us to Sokka's therapy session. Like, his beard returns, and he's trying to help. Pardon?
Said I love it.
You love the beard.
I love the
it's
beard.
Ridiculous.
Oh, and I just thought of something, Natalie, that we should reference. Just by saying it, and super fans will get it, that there was somewhat of a significance.
Okay.
No, it's good. There's somewhat of a significance in Toph referencing of acupuncture to the Legend of Korra.
I suppose that's true. Yes.
Yes, you know what I'm talking about. So I was thinking of that scene, and I was like, that's cool. but yeah, those koala sheep.
Poor listeners.
Yeah, the poor listeners who don't know what we're talking about yet. You will.
I love the koala sheep. I always have. I think they're ridiculous. I love when he gives him the koala lamb, like, try screaming into this pillow. So, yeah. How did everyone feel about Sokka's therapy session? Which of these three, you know, the Toph massage, the Katara yoga, the Sokka therapy, which one did you think would be the most helpful or would like to participate in the most, I suppose. Brittany, how did you feel about soccer as a therapist compared to the other guys?
I mean, you would think that Sokka had access to, like, television, and he took all he knew from watching, like, random television shows, and he was like, this is what a therapist is supposed to do. And he was, so he just, like, pulled out everything he knew. I would go to him, to be honest.
Yeah.
He just wants you to talk, and he wants to listen.
Yeah. And I would like it if he gave me one of those sheep to lie on, pretty much. so, you know, something that I kind of, obviously really liked is Aang's reaction to all of his dreams. Not only they were affecting him, but he, like, started freaking out about, I guess, like, all of the others as well. It's like, in my dream, you did this, so you have to do this, so I know that you're going to be safe, which was very sweet. But then he starts, you know, hallucinating during the day, and he has daydream about basically telling Katara how he feels about her. And, you know, them sort of kissing, and then we discover that it is, in fact, a daydream when it becomes completely ridiculous. So, basically, who bought this all the way through the first time around? Like, who, you know, or what was the point where you kind of realized that it was a daydream rather than, like, you know, something happening in reality of the show? So, Mitch, how about you, like, the first time you saw it?
The second time I saw it, I believed it. And then I didn't when I wrote, where Aang says, "Be my forever girl, baby." And, like, the way he delivers it is just, like, I would have bought it if even they made that line a little bit more believable. Because the music, like, rushes, and, like, you buy it other than that line. So, and Ariana,
the same for me, actually.
So you, like, really bought it.
At that moment, the "Be my forever girl," that was where I was like, no.
But second time around?
That, I totally bought it. Yeah, even today when I watched it today.
Shut up! Wow, I'm glad I'm not like.
I'd forgotten right. that it wasn't.
It was very believable, and Ariana, you believed it the whole time.
I did, even when he said, "Be my forever girl." Oh, I really? Still, yeah.
Even with that big gross close up of the kissing mouth.
Yes, even okay. They make gross kisses on this show. Okay, every time they go kiss, they, like, have their teeth and their tongue. Like, first they stick their tongues out, then they stick them in each other's mouths.
They do.
Oh, it's so gross.
It's, like, natural.
And, like, her reaction was so good. Like, I mean, to where you would believe that it was actually happening. Like, it wasn't like she was like, "Oh, Aang." Like, if she was, then I wouldn't believe it.
Sorry, Aang, but I'm taken, is what she really should have said. That's when I would have really believed it.
The only thing that I thought was weird is that in his daydream, he's just as tall, if not a little bit taller than her. And that was the part where I was like,
I suppose that's something you could notice.
He's like, when did he grow that he didn't? That was just his daydream.
In his head, he's just got a complex. And then the other daydream, which was probably a bit more entertaining, was the... you know, the bit where Momo starts to talk and then Appa starts to talk and then they have a fight. So, that one I'm assuming no one believed was real, even when Momo started talking the first time.
I hope not.
Who did you prefer being able to talk, Momo or Appa? Like, if one of them could permanently talk, Mitch, which one do you wish it was?
I like Momo's sassiness. I think Momo's talked before. In some aspect, and I think it was really funny. Oh my gosh, Brittany, this is so funny. My cats are playing with the toys you gave me for my Secret Santa so that they wouldn't bother me during Rewatchable. Now they're making noise because they're jingling.
Oh, no. Cut the bells off.
That's funny. And also, I think it's a good point to reference too that there was a lot of other anime referenced here, like a shit ton. I couldn't even try and follow.
In this fight scene.
Right, but there's one that everyone would know, wouldn't necessarily call it a samurai fight, but from Star Wars, the Clone Wars, General Grievous was represented in Appa's six swords spinning around the ways that he was.
I don't know what that is, but okay.
Star Wars? No one?
No. I know what Star Wars is, but I don't know it well enough to know what you're talking about.
He's like the main villain of the second episode. He's the main villain of the second episode. That's so shocking.
I've only seen episode 5. I haven't seen it. I had to watch it for class.
Oh, that's so sad.
Sorry.
I thought that was a reference that actually everyone would get, because a lot of them were, like, difficult.
I'm sure a lot of people listening will, just don't like Star Wars.
Okay, fair enough. Well, there's a villain that has six swords and fights just like Appa did, so there.
Anyway, we will move on from that, from the Appa and Momo fight, to the more important times of the troubling times of Posh Zuko. So, we see that he's really being pampered and, you know, he doesn't have to walk everywhere. He's like, yeah, I'm just going to go out and walk over to my girlfriend's house. And they're like, no, you have to be carried. So they carry him across the main square to his girlfriend's house. And he gets to eat all of this really cool food and people follow him around with hot towels. And of course, Zuko's just like, oh, this is hard. This isn't what I want. So
there must be more of this provincial life.
Yeah, seriously. So how did you guys feel about seeing Zuko attempt to fit into his like role as the beloved crown prince? Because the people seem to really love him. Like, you know, they scream and they're like, yay, Prince Zuko! Yay! Everyone's trying to serve him and he's not super comfortable with it, I guess. Like, so do you think he's just being a brat at this point, or do you think he, like, you know, he wants more, he wants to be where the people are, like he wants to see them dancing or something.
Oh, Ariana, my God.
Sorry, how did you feel about Zuko's, like, you know, rejection of the royal pampering?
Natalie, I'm still so frustrated. I'm so angry every time these scenes come on. Like, it's making me hate Mei, which is, like, unfair to her, but I, like, hate her because she's, like, an enabler to this lifestyle. And, like, I'm just like, Zuko, like, really, you should have left. What episode are we on? 9? You should have left 9 episodes ago. Like, you should have left, like, 29 episodes ago. What is going on? Just go back. Aang needs your help. Katara needs your loving.
Sleep in the forest.
Yeah.
Use a rock for a pillar.
Like, it was super annoying. Like, he wasn't... when he was complaining about the war meeting, like, I was fine with everything else, even Mei, because, like, you could tell Mei's just trying to make him feel better. Like, will it make you feel better to order around some guards? Like, and he doesn't care about that, I don't think. Like, he doesn't want the attention. But it was when he was complaining about the war meeting to Azula, and she's like, she was actually, like, kind of nice in her own way in that scene, because she was just like, listen, you're the prince, so right? Sense. Like, you could just show up.
The thing is about Azula in that scene was that she was so... I couldn't tell whether she was fucking with him or not. Like, the thing, she wanted
Azula's
him to...
Azula's always fucking with Zuko.
Like, she was telling 100% the truth, but she still managed to spin it in a way that made him insecure and feel like he was being screwed with.
Yeah.
That's his own insecurities. He needs to, like, buck up. Come on, Zuko. Jeez.
Because, like, even when Azula seems her most earnest, that's when I see her as being her most manipulative. Because she's not being, like, apparent about it. Because, you know, she's just like, oh, I'm sure it was nothing. What are you worrying about? Because she doesn't have a certain tone to it. It's just, it seems natural. And that makes it even worse.
Like, you probably weren't even invited because you're the most important person in the Fire Nation. You're the Crown Prince. And it's like... You can see in his head, he's like, but what if I throw up and Dad banishes me again because Azula's told me a lie, if you know what I mean. Like, that's so what's going on with him. He's like, I'm not going to go. And it's just such a mess. And I don't know, I get what you guys are saying about Mei, like, that she's enabling, like, the, you know, the lifestyle and all of that kind of thing. But, like, I don't know, like, what other options that she thinks that, you know, she has, like, that this is, like, just what their life is, I guess, and maybe people accept that too easily, like, people accept their positions too easily, and, you know, Zuko's trying to accept his and finds that, like, he can't, but I don't know.
The main thing that bothers me about her in this episode is the way that she's so, like, dismissive of the servants, which I guess that's, like, supposed to be funny, but I don't think it's funny. They're so, they're, like, really mean to them. And
so I actually noticed that Zuko wasn't exactly, he was like,
it's more her.
To the guards, he was like, excuse me, do you guys think that you could find a fruit pie, if you know what I mean? Like, he's quite nice to them, which I liked, but, you know,
it was,
I know,
cute
what you mean.
The way he was talking about it, because he was like, my girlfriend, she wants a fruit. And it was like, oh, I want him to order me food.
Zuko, he's the only nice person in the Fire Nation.
He's like the only nice person in the show.
Do you guys, he's not the only nice person in the show, but do you guys think that he will ever fit in with the Fire Nation? Like, do you think that his destiny is maybe to, like, live in another society of people? Or do you think that he's ever going to be, like, you know, part of this society of people? Is he just not meant to be around people that act like this?
Well, I don't think he fits in with them, but I don't see who else he could fit in with because he's just so, like, angsty. Like,
I feel like he's, like, Fire Nation colony material. Like, in the country, Fire Nation people. Like, not in the kingdom proper.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, he did get along with
I think he would like family. The Southern Water Tribe.
Yeah, you think he should live in the Southern Water Tribe and raise little Southern Water Tribe babies?
He already tried that, and he, like, almost murdered everyone.
But I think he would do well around, like, happier people because he's, like, so naturally prone to depression that I think that being, like, around sunnier people would be nice for him.
Fair enough. But all of the people in the Fire Nation love him, and they're trying to make things good for him, and it's still not making him happy. Like he says.
No, because Uncle is trapped and, like, starving and dying.
Yeah, fair enough. So,
and
yeah,
part of that even reminds me of, like, what was going on with, like, the Judies and the Earth Kingdom, where it was, like, I don't know, Aang would be like, I'm not happy being pampered right now because I know I'm just being, you know, what was it, surged to that Toph said? Or
Handled, yeah.
Right. And I think Zuko feels like he's being handled and not treated like a war hero, but more just like this glorious posh prince who gets to sit in his little throne and fed grapes all day, like that kind of stuff.
Oh, did Ariana just say, sadly, he was happy making tea?
He was.
That's not sad, that's humble.
In the alley.
The girl that's now dead in the alley.
The one he left to
die. Yeah, the dead girl.
Yeah. At least he lit up the alley before he left her, you know?
Good times. So yeah, he does have a pretty strong realization at the end of this, like, that this might be a turning point, finally. He's like, I was in the war meeting, I was perfect, my father was proud of me, and it's not who I am, and it sucked. So do you think that this is finally the wake-up call for him to be like, this isn't actually the life that I want?
I don't know how many he needs. He's had, like, 50 of these already.
I agree 150%.
Every week, I think he's leaving. Every week. And he still hasn't left. Literally since the beginning of season 2, every week I think he's leaving, and he hasn't.
Okay, well, cross your fingers this time.
Yeah. You know what? He's just staying around for the royal hair combings at this point. Why else would you stay around?
Well, but next week is the invasion, right? So it has to be next week. If it's not next week, then I feel like, what's even the point?
I'll cross my fingers for you. I'll try and project so that you get what you want. Unless anyone has any questions about the happenings of this episode, we'll go to our favorite scenes and lines. My favorite scene was Aang panicking about, number one, it was the koala sheep. And number two, it was all of the other ones that you guys have mentioned. But besides from those, it was Aang panicking about what will happen to the others from his dreams. Like being like, you know, you climb the cliff because you know, in my dream you did this. And then, you know, Katara, tie up your hair, etc. So that was my favorite bit. So go down the list and we can do our favorite quotes and scenes and finish it up. Because we're all really, really desperate to see all of our favorite celebrities get drunk at the Golden Globes right now. So let's go. Brittany, how about you?
All right. Mine was therapist Sokka, but more specifically when he turns around and he's like, do you need to talk about it some more? And he, like, has the beard on again.
Beard back.
Yeah. That was me.
I love the therapist Sokka. Yeah. Ariana, how about you?
I loved Azula's hair washing scene because once again, she sounds totally sane and rational and also crazy at the same time. But I just love like the ladies like washing her hair and her just sitting there. Like she knows how to be a princess. This woman should be running a country except that she's crazy. But like if you took away the crazy, she'd be the best.
Mm-hmm.
And also to that lady who like went crazy and like crumpled at Zuko's feet because all I could think about was like, that's probably Natalie, like if she saw him.
No, it's just Katara.
Neither I or Katara would crumple at Zuko's feet. We'd both think like, you idiot, come here and let me nuzzle you into my bosom. Like, but anyway, moving on from that.
And then mine was Aang's chattering conversation with Momo because he was so convinced that he was talking to Momo, and he was like laughing at it, like, ha ha ha, I'm so funny, ha ha ha.
it's I like the talking Momo as well. It got real weird when they started having the fight with Appa and Momo, but I liked the initial talking Momo. Yeah. In terms of quotes, my favorite one was the final bit where he's like, "No, Fire Lord Ozai, you're not wearing pants." And pretty much every time, like in those nightmares where they were like, "How are you going to do this when you're not wearing pants?" Or this time I brought my pants. For some reason, I found this hysterical and ridiculous. God, Ariana, don't distract me right now with that. I can't think about it. But my other favorite part, which I forgot when I was writing this, is actually the hallucination of Guru Patik coming across singing chakras, chakras, everybody loves chakras, because that gets sung in my house like probably once a week, that song. Like someone will sing the chakras, everybody loves chakras song. So that's very important to me. But let's go down the list quickly with the quotes as well. Brittany, what was yours?
My favorite line was, I guess I kind of drifted off into a daydream, because it meant that that whole thing with Aang and Katara was not real.
Sorry about it.
Next week, Sotara! Decided war!
You're like, yes, they're finally going to be in the same place again.
Yay! Am I next?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so in my favorite was when Aang is like yelling at Toph, "In my dream, we were in the middle of the invasion, but you had to stop to use the bathroom. We died because of your tiny bladder."
Yeah. Yes. Very good. And Mitch, how about you?
Yeah. You guys are going to know why I picked this one. Relax. That's like 4 days from now. Hashtag the lazy avatar. Yes.
I did really like that delivery. Like, it's okay. The invasion's in 4 days. That's like 4 days from now. I really love that. But yeah. We've got a little bit of feedback, but first of all, if you want to reach us after the episode at all, you can join us in our email. You can send us a lovely e-letter at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can reach us on Twitter, re_watchable. You can comment on this post on hyperball.com. And if you review us on iTunes, we would really love that. If you give us a 5-star rating, then Karen will give you a royal hair combing and you won't have to wait in line either. I mean, that's a great deal. Like, I
it's
would
probably
like that.
The best thing Karen's been given, so definitely. She'll be more willing
she might
to do it.
Actually, do this one. Yeah. So that would be great. Yeah, cool. We've got a bit of feedback here. The first one is an email from Zach saying, "Hey guys, I wasn't sure the best place to contact you with all of this, so I decided I'd use the email. You guys are incredible. I love listening to you talk about one of my favorite shows, and you enlighten me on so many different topics. I've listened since Veronica Mars, which I also fell in love with, and I never tire of any of your voices. It's so nice. I always get so excited when a new episode's released. You guys make me feel better when nothing else can." Wow, this is getting really deep. And I'm grateful to each and every one of you. I just really wanted to let you, all of you know how much you mean to me. I'll keep listening and following you no matter what you decide to do next." And that is from Zach.
That's so guys, beautiful.
So nice.
That's really intense. I'm, like, I don't know how right to respond now to that.
This is like better than those chicken soup.
I keep waiting for it to like take a turn and be like, "But Brittany needs to go."
Thank you very much about saying like such a sincere thing, and that's really I'm not actually going to give you a Twitter handle just in case it's something that you actually didn't want us to say publicly and that it was just meant to be an emotional expression, but we just wanted to say thank you for saying that. That is really, really nice and really special that, you know, it means so much to you. So we will keep going for your sake and for everyone else that you know, loves to listen. On Hyperball comments, we had one from Luke with a WK, which I think that he has said before that we pronounce badly, but sorry about that. "I have to say that this rewatchable episode was really good and that I'm really looking forward to next week. Creators shared that the Atla episode, the Avatar and the Fire Lord, had the most diverse background designs out of any episode in the series. Now that the end of Atla is approaching, what do you think, what do you guys think of the different backgrounds and how they're the different places and how they're portrayed? And is someone ever going to mention the amazing music? Hope to hear your thoughts on the next episode. Greetings, Luke."
I never noticed the music.
I have actually been to a panel with the music creators of this
of this show. They're actually pretty well known for it.
Oh, that's cool.
They have like a production company, and yeah, they definitely do a lot of work with, like, you know, all the different instruments from different cultures that the places are based on and all of that kind of thing. So there is a lot of work put into the music for Atla, which is great. And I really do enjoy that if you ever want to look into it.
I like to say that the series has won an Emmy for the music. Am I wrong in saying that?
I don't know. We can probably...
It has won an Emmy, but I don't remember for what. And I think that might have been like one of the multiple that it won.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's definitely pretty renowned for the music. So maybe, yeah, just tune in a little bit mentally to the music maybe next time you watch and have a think about it. We probably don't have time to talk about, like, all of the different places and how they're portrayed and, like, the, you know, the history and, like, the, you know, the backstory of the different cultures. But it's certainly incredibly researched and all of that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I really, really love that. Twitter, we've got a couple from people. Gordy Walls, episode 309, Aang is a Starbucks lover. He's gone insane. But Ozai's not wearing pants lately, and Zuko knows he's lame. # koala sheep. Was this like a request for a poem about the episode or something?
I don't know, but it's referencing blank space, so I love it.
Yeah. Oh, I should have sung it. Oh, I totally get it. Okay, I should have sung it. I'm not going to go back and sing it.
I'm singing it in my head. It's okay.
But shout out koala sheep.
Yeah, # koala sheep. Someone else, Nikki, saying, hello, Twitch, saying, just realized one of my favorite episodes of Avatar The Last Airbender will be covered in the next rewatchable, The Puppet Master, which I don't know if it's one of my favorite episodes, but it's certainly a bit of an eye-opener in terms of the bloodbending. So, yeah, I'm glad that we finally got to that one.
I thought that both of these episodes, like, sounded like Neil Gaiman picked the names out of a hat when I read them. I was like, the Puppet Masters totally and Nightmares true. And Daydreams? Are you kidding?
Totally true. I totally get that. and then, Mitch, did you want to take this bit of news about Veronica Mars?
Yeah, we have two events happening, and I'll read the script that I wrote for myself. I wrote, Marshmallows, which are Veronica Mars fans, get excited. Not only is the series creator Rob Thomas releasing the second Veronica Mars book, Mr. Kiss and Tell, on January 20th, but the show iZombie from Thomas airs its pilot on the CW on March 17th at 9 p.m. EST, and the trailer came out also, which shows that basically it's going to be like a zombie superhero, super crime-solving superhero.
It's like
show.
Veronica Mars if she was a zombie, basically. I went to the panel at CDCC, and it looks awesome. If you like Veronica Mars, you'll love it. If you like zombies, well, it's more funny. It's not like The Walking Dead at all. But I highly recommend it, and it comes on after The Flash, which I love.
So that'd be a fun way for you to channel your missing Veronica Mars love that you no longer have, because Rewatchable's done, and so is the show. So the movie, the book and the new show will keep you entertained.
Cool. Well, thank you for listening, everyone, and we will leave you all now. Until next time, it's going to, you know, next week's the invasion. Get ready, get prepared. Do you guys think that this is going to be like the, you know, like the big, you know, the big
hit? Zuko leaves?
Pardon?
The big hit? Oh, you think they're, like, defeating the Fire Nation? Definitely not, because we still have half the season left, so they're going to lose.
They could be setting up a whole new society. You don't know.
No, they're losing.
Okay. All right. Until next week, then, when we watch them lose the invasion. I have been Natalie.
I'm Mitch.
I'm Steph.
I'm Ariana.
I'm Brittany.
This was out of order, Mitch.
There's an order for this, too. There are so many specific things for show notes.
Usually we keep the order the same
order
as the quotes and stuff, right. But whatever.
Because people have colors.
One job.
One day I'll get it right.
Never mind. Should we do this again?
No.
All right.
No, we're good.
Then leave the complaining about Mitch in.
All right.
Because I didn't really get to complain that much, you know. I'm sorry, Mitch.
Well,
I miss complaining.
It's fine. You know who we all are. We're going to go. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.